come back until I learn to deal with it properly. And so it goes. And in this particular lifetime, the issue of war and peace was very much a part of my early life, in which I had career aspirations of being a soldier. And certainly the experience in genuine battlefields and dodging real bullets left me with the very clear conviction that, nope, this is not something I do. That much I can see in it. And I'm really hoping someone will put up their hand or say something here and get me off the hot seat. And I'm going to relinquish the mic at this point because I... All right, there's a hand up. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to attempt. I've got all these kind of pictures and images and things running around in my mind that I don't know that I can put words to. First of all, I have to say that the whole thing, I mean, I've been listening for most of the time, and the things you brought up about unique, our uniqueness within the oneness, is something that has been coming up for me a lot. And, you know, I'm just very appreciative of what you brought out about that. Then the parts about the three different worlds were also very interesting to me. And somehow I'm trying to tie this all together with the idea of war and karma and all of these other concepts that we're talking about. And, you know, the idea that we're unique souls as part of one soul. And, you know, there's all this stuff seemingly happening in the dream that, you know, I don't know. I think of this phrase that we use a lot in this room, everything's perfect all the time. And I think sometimes I tend to think about that in terms of the room. Yeah, everything's perfect in here all the time. But really that extends everywhere, and with all the conflict that's going on, somehow there's something that ties in. You know, you see the war and that brings something to your awareness, and I'm somehow tying this in to what you were talking about of getting into the happy dream, of coming from this reality of the one reality to the other. It's like until we become aware and can, you know, maybe do something about some of these things and bring that happy dream into existence, because they're starving children and there's more than enough, there's love to take care of those starving children, but we're running around like chickens with our heads cut off, not responding to the calls. I mean, that's a call for love, and we're not responding to those for whatever reason, because we're so caught up in our whatever we're caught up in, or we're where we're supposed to be, but it's part of the unfolding. And, you know, I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to tie, or in my mind, all these ideas are sort of congealing, and it makes sense to me. I don't know that it's making sense to anybody else, but that's kind of how I'm I'm seeing it. So thank you, Doug. It was really, I've really enjoyed listening to you today and all that you've shared. So I'm going to drop the mic here. Thanks.
Well, it's occurring to me as you were speaking there that, as I understand what the course is teaching me, there is always a happy dream replacement for the nightmare. And if I act in judgment of villains or victims, I'm not going to be helpful in bringing about the happy dream. But if I can give my judgments to the Holy Spirit in forgiveness, then I can act in a way, or I can be available, if called, to act in a way that can be helpful in the context. And one of the things that occurs to me in the context of the battlefield in a genuine real life war is that, well, you see the worst that humanity has to offer in warfare. You also see the best, that in the adversity of living in a city under siege, for instance, people pull together in a most remarkable way. People become helpful to each other in a most remarkable way. In many natural disasters as well as man-made disasters, we see sometimes the very best of humanity coming out in the midst of what appears to be, at first glance, the worst. And that was, you know, it's funny. I talk about the trauma of warfare and battlefields from Mozambique and my time there. But mostly what I remember of that time is very, very, very positive. So many holy instants, one might say, so many people rising above human limitations and reaching out to help each other in the midst of crisis, outshines the horrors. And that in itself is, I suppose, part of the lesson. And I'm a little bit apologetic here because I haven't thought about this or analyzed this or rehearsed this or have any cogently, clearly thought out things to say about this. It all came from Deborah's question. And so, Deborah, why don't you pick up the mic and get me off the hook here?
Oh God, I'm laughing now. I was in the kitchen doing dishes and I'm thinking to myself, it wasn't a question, it wasn't a question, it wasn't a question. If you're going back to that one that was taken as a question a while ago. But I would like to try and clarify something about what I was thinking earlier when I was hearing a lot of everything's this projection that we are projecting everything, and it's all up to us. And I just cannot swallow that one. It doesn't work that way in my life. Maybe eventually it will, but not where I am and not where I see everybody around me as being. It's not working that way. Some of it can be projection. Some of it can just be that it's a call for love for us to be loving. And when it's a projection, then it's a call for us to take a look at our stuff and to take a look at what is going on inside ourselves and what we are actually projecting on to someone outside of us. And that would pertain to what are we judging out there. We're going to feel very uncomfortable if we're judging something outside of us or what we're perceiving as outside of us than loving something. So there's going to be a big difference there. But someone else outside of me in this illusion or dream or whatever we want to keep calling it then they can have stuff going on that is, that I've already come through. I can identify the stuff that's going on in them. I can witness it, but it's not my stuff. And I can stand by and be in that, that strength of love and alignment for the person who is going through their stuff. So that's what was coming up for me when there was a lot of this talk about it's all us, it's all me, and it's a, I have to change, and then everything out there changes. But it's not that simplistic. I don't see it as that simplistic, or this would all be changed, because there's so much that I've changed already inside myself where I can stand in love and alignment when it's chaos around me. So that's where I was coming from. Now, does that make any sense, Doug? I'm not sure when I make sense sometimes and when I don't. I do to me sometimes.
Okay, well, what I keep hearing you say, and I may be misunderstanding, is the fact or the idea that I'm dreaming the dream, I'm dreaming my experience, but so are other people, and sometimes what I see happening has very little to do with me and a whole lot to do with others. And probably landing on a battlefield in Mozambique, for me, had a lot more to do with the others who were having a war than it had to do with me. But in some sense, in my understanding, I needed to see that. I needed to be there and share at least a few weeks of that with them, because there was something they could teach me in that process. So I chose to dream that dream of being on the battlefield, even if it wasn't my battlefield, and even if it wasn't a fight over things that I was in any way directly involved with. And sometimes it's true that we can get caught in the crossfire and end up in the middle of somebody else's fight without a whole lot we can do about it. Yet, I trust that if we can turn to guidance, even in that kind of a situation, we can act in a way, however small, that is helpful and be vehicles for the Holy Spirit, even on a battlefield. And in some senses, there's there's nowhere else on earth, in space and time and in a nightmare, where help is more needed than on the battlefield, and where a calm and centered and guided presence can be a blessing to a whole lot of people who are caught up in their own nightmare, even if it's not my nightmare, in the sense of it's not my war. I have nothing to fight about here. And that can also be a part of the two reasons we come here, to heal ourselves and to help others heal. And sometimes an issue is for my healing, an issue that presents itself, and sometimes an issue is for my help, where others, brothers, are calling to me through the Holy Spirit for assistance in dealing with their issues that in some way I might be able to help them with. And I see, Deborah, you have your hand up, so I'm going to let you talk.
Yeah, something came to mind when you're talking about you're over in Mozambique and there's war going on, and it's not your war, you're not the one fighting. You're the one definitely witnessing it, or you're one of the ones. So in line with the Course in Miracles and the lessons would be that means nothing to me. What I see means nothing to me. So it depends what the meaning is that's on that. If what you're seeing is actions from individuals, and what's the meaning, what triggers inside you. That would be what your lessons are. Would that not be it? That if you're seeing something that's very disruptive to inside you, to me it could very much be that you've got judgments going on in there that you would need to look at, or you're picking up on the disturbance on them, and it's if it didn't cling to you, then it would just be witnessing and acknowledging that there's these feelings going on with those other people and these grievances, and you know, being in touch with the whole kit and caboodle of it, but not taking that inside away with you, or not changing you inside. You're able to maintain that alignment of love. So sort of the two things that could possibly be going on there is what I can see. I'm going to let go of the mic again.
That's actually very interesting and I think helpful. There was one big lesson for me in all of that experience, and it was a very short, I think it lasted maybe 30 minutes, period where I was actually under fire, and my, I'm going to call it childhood military training. As a teenager, I joined the Army for a brief time and went through basic training, where my military training literally kicked in, and I responded literally as a trained soldier, and it was useful training, because my first instinct was to take cover. And I remembered Colonel Rumble's instructions: when we find ourselves under fire and we are not able to return the fire and eliminate it immediately, what do we do, gentlemen? We take cover. So I did. And then I thought, okay, where's the fire coming from? How can I return it? And of course, I had no weapon, so I couldn't. And in subsequent reflection on that that experience, there was in as I reflect on it now, I see the whole ego structure of defend the body, and some of that defense has survival value. Taking cover is not necessarily a bad idea when bullets are flying around your head. It's, you know, kind of useful. But it also was a profoundly terrifying experience. It was fearful, and I see now, having read the Course and learned the Course somewhat since that time, that there is an ego instinct to respond to attack with both taking cover and counterattack, fight back. And the fight back simply creates more war. Get the blazes out of there, which is what I proceeded to do fairly shortly after that. I got out of there. But what it definitely showed me was that there is a level in me of instinctual response, and to some extent a trained soldier's response to a perceived attack. And what you do is you fight back if you possibly can, and only if you can't fight back do you take cover. The first response is to return fire and get rid of the threat. Second response is to, okay, if you can't do that, then you take cover. And how much that's just totally ego. That's war. That's how ego understands the universe. If I perceive an attack, what do? I get rid of it. I attack it. And only if I fail or can't do that do I then try to hide. None of which is remotely turning to the Holy Spirit for advice. And I certainly wasn't turning to the Holy Spirit for advice consciously at that point. I was oh, these bullets are real. Oh, I can't respond. Oh, I better take cover. And that was a particular lesson that has kind of stuck with me, because I had, at the time, thought of myself as a pacifist. I had become totally disenchanted with militarism and the army and adopted a pacifist point of view. And yet I saw my instincts, if they'd, literally, at that point, if they'd given me a gun, I would have used it. And I would have known how to use it. And that disturbed me a great deal, because it showed me a part of myself I guess I'd repressed and denied in some to some extent, yet there it was. I was quite capable of picking up a weapon and killing people. And I would have, in the moment, felt entirely justified in doing so. And in that process, my compassion for soldiers and people who do that increased greatly, because I realized that there but for the grace of God go I, and in their shoes I'd probably be behaving in the same way, and who am I to judge them, because I'm really no different. So there was that moment, fortunately brief, was that was an important lesson for me. And I'm going to stop now, and hopefully somebody else will have something to say.